Well, stories are so important, aren't they? They're so important. We tell stories all the time. We think in stories. We might not call it that. We don't always say I'm thinking in stories, but it is what we do. We perceive our lives as stories. That's why we can do things like writing the story of someone's life, because that's a biography, because our lives have a story kindness to them. Even someone who argues against this idea that life is a story or says, oh, stories aren't that important. No, it's not about stories, it's about facts and propositions. That person at that moment is telling a story about themselves being a person who lives by facts and propositions rather than stories. You can't get away from it. We all tell stories. We live by stories. We are each, in a sense, telling ourselves the story of our lives all the time. Or perhaps, just as much, maybe even more, we're buying into one story or another that we then understand and shape our lives by. Now, there's one person who's been, well, a number of people, but one of the people who's been involved a lot in very well-known stories in the last 50 years is Harrison Ford, because he's been Han Solo, he's been Indiana Jones, he's been Rick Deckard from Blade Runner, for those of us who are into more edgy sci-fi. Probably only me, and he's been a number of other iconic characters and great stories. And Harrison Ford spoke in an interview a few years ago about why he does what he does and why he thinks it's important. And in relation to that, he said this. He said, that's why stories are important. They're helping us interpret the world we live in. They help us to have the courage to deal with the complexity of our lives. These stories, he's right, I think, stories do help us to understand our lives and work out how to live in them. So with that in mind, I want to ask us all a question today. What's the story that you are living by? What's the story that you see yourself as part of and kind of live into? What's the story of your life being shaped by? You may not have thought about that before, but I wonder if you can think, what is the story that you live by? And let me ask you this with that. Can the story you live by really make sense of life? Both of the darkness and the genuineness of evil in the world, that truly is evil, and as well the light and the goodness of the world. Does the story you live by help you to figure out how to live well? How to figure out what to do? And vitally, does the story you live by give you hope? Does it give you a reason to think that there is real hope to hold on to? And there are very different stories out there in our culture. One common one for our culture is expressed by the historian Yuval Noah Harari in his influential and big-selling book, Sapiens. And in his story of the world that he's telling in this book, he says this, none of these things exist outside the stories that people invent and tell one another. There are no gods in the universe. There are no nations, no money, no human rights, no laws, and no justice outside the common imagination of human beings. So his story of life in the world, which is actually a very common one, is basically where the physical and naturally occurring stuff is what really exists, and everything else doesn't really. It's just kind of things we've made up or created, and we use them. They're in our imagination. We use them to influence each other, but they're not really real. That's what he says. So only the physical, kind of naturally occurring stuff of the world that we can see. Well, that's one story, common story in our culture. Another one that we may live by, and probably even more common, is we wouldn't go as far as Harari did. We wouldn't say that there's only physical stuff. There might be more to life than that, but we're not sure. So we think, well, the story I'm living by is if I try to be a good person, it'll turn out okay in the end, one way or the other. That's a couple of the stories in our culture. But through the Bible readings and carols that we've sung today, we've heard today, we've actually been hearing a very different story to either of those two. It's the big story of the Bible. It's the story of life and the world according to the Bible. It began with the Gospel of John, where we heard of the creation of all things by the Word who was with God and who was God, and through him all things were made. And that means that, according to this, the world isn't simply a kind of impersonal reality There's actually intention behind the world. There's a purpose to it. Life has come from somewhere and it's going somewhere. It's come from someone. That's actually a very positive picture of the universe. And yet we know the universe isn't all positive. We heard about that in this big story that we've heard today as well, in the book of Genesis. Genesis means beginnings. And we heard of what is called the fall, a picture of things going wrong, of deception by the power of evil, and of a rupture in the relationship between us and our Creator God as the serpent instilled skepticism towards God's trustworthiness. Do you hear that? Did God really say, well, God doesn't want what's best for you? And then as a result, humans listen to that and they reject their Creator, we heard. And then there's alienation from God that comes with that. Remember, God called out to the man, where are you? But the man had hidden from God. And here we see an understanding given to us by the big story of the Bible of the kind of evilness and the strangeness and the difficulty of evil. There is evil in the world. It is real. There is darkness in the world and it is real. And it does matter. It's part of the rupture that comes from our rejection of our Creator, according to this big story. And there are consequences as well to that. In our other reading from Genesis 3, we saw humanity banished from the garden, from an intimate presence and relationship with God and safety. They were banished as a result of the ruptured relationship. Flaming swords keeping us out from the paradise that we'd been in because of what we'd done. We're not in a paradise now with sort of direct and untroubled relationship with God. Yes, we're in a wonderful creation, but it's a creation that's ruptured. And that was expressed as well, wasn't it, in the beautiful carol, O Come, O Come, Emmanuel, which we sung between those Genesis readings. The sense of mourning in exile, living under tyranny, the depths of hell, the long night's lingering gloom, the shadows of the tomb. And yet, even amidst the rupture and its consequences, we heard a note of grace and hope. I wonder if you noticed it. The Lord God provided for the people who had rejected him. He made them garments out of care for them so that they wouldn't be left uncovered. See, that's telling us God has not abandoned us, even in this dark place in which we left. We often feel it's dark. There's a ray of hope's light. And that connects to when we moved on to the book of Isaiah. He was a prophet who lived about the 8th century BC, and we heard a famous promise of a ruler of righteousness and peace. Just before the reading that we heard, the prophet had spoken of people going, we didn't hear this, but this is what happens in the book of Isaiah. The prophet had spoken about people going about in darkness, looking at the earth and seeing distress and darkness and fearful gloom as they looked around. It's a desperate picture. And it's one, to be honest, that most of us can identify with at some point or another. Many of us have been able to identify with it in the last few years. We've looked at the news of what's going on the earth and we've seen despair and darkness and we've wondered, how can there be hope? Where is all this leading? But then in the reading we heard from chapter 9, the people walking in darkness have seen a great light. Hope breaks in. There's a promise of one who will come and restore things, who will mend the rupture. This child who will be born, this son who will be given. And then in the next Isaiah reading, we saw the outworking of this promise coming. Here's a ruler who will bring justice and give hope for peace for all creation with knowledge of the Lord. The wolf will lie down with the lamb. They will neither harm nor destroy on all my holy mountain. Hope for peace. It's a wonderful picture. But from Isaiah's time, for hundreds of years, time passed. And that hope remained, but it remained an unfulfilled hope until, as we heard in our reading from Matthew's Gospel, a young woman found that she was pregnant. And the young woman's fiancé, Joseph, found himself in a dilemma. Such an intimate and normal situation in a way, certainly one that's in some ways been around lots of times, and we know. And yet, this one was different. In an incredible way, this was the very humble beginnings of the greatest turning point in this big story. because this baby, this one, was the one who'd been promised by Isaiah and others many centuries before. This was the one we heard in Matthew who would be called Jesus because he would save his people from their sins. That is, he would save his people from the rejection of God that was the ultimate cause of this rupture and this darkness. And this child would also be Emmanuel, which means, beautifully, God with us. Not just God at a distance, but God with us. Because God didn't want us to stay banished from him, so he came in the person of Jesus to put right what we had put wrong. So when this mother laid her baby in a manger for his bed, it was the arrival of the light who had been promised to pierce the darkness, the ruler who would bring justice and peace. That was the time that had fully come, as one of the earliest followers of Jesus said in the last reading we had from the book of Galatians in the New Testament. It was the time when the story was at the point of salvation. This Son of God came and redeemed us. In other words, he bought us out, paid us out of the debt to the darkness that we'd gotten ourselves into. And that part of the story is told more fully at Easter time with the cross and resurrection. But today we're focused on leading up to that point, the big story up to that point. We've seen a snapshot of this big story of the world, which carries on beyond this too. I'd love to share that with you later. But in the meantime, as we've seen this big story, a snapshot of this big story of the world leading up to Christmas, let me ask you this. Which story do you live by? Is the story that we've sung and heard read today, is it the story that you live by? Is that the story that shapes your life? I ask that of those of us who would call ourselves Christians, as well as of those of us who wouldn't, who aren't sure. Is this big story really, really the story that you live by? The story that we've heard and sung today, does it shape how you understand yourself in the world? And let me ask you, if not, is the story you live by as good as this one? Does it make sense of the goodness and yet darkness of the world? Does it give you help, real help, with how to navigate life as well as this story does? Does it give you genuine reasons for hope the way this story does? Does the story you live by do those things? Now, you may well have questions about this big story. How do we know the truth of it? What will it mean to live by it? And they're all good questions, and ones I encourage you to ask more, and ones I'd be keen to help you work through. But let me address, just for a moment, one particular blocker that I think many of us have to acknowledging this story, to saying this story is the true story. This is the story I want to live by. The thing is, if this story is the true story, and if it's therefore the story we want to shape our lives by, then even as good as it is, as much explanatory power as it has, as much hope as it gives, it has one difficult reality. See, if you live by this big story of the Bible, then you have to accept that you are not the main character. I listen to music using an app called Spotify. And each year, about this time, Spotify gives you a thing called Wrapped, and where it tells you what you've been listening to the most, what your statistics are, what your most popular artist, your most popular song, your most popular genre, and all that. Now, a couple of years ago, in my 2021 Wrapped presentation, it kind of used this gimmick to do it, because, you know, they're trying to get you into this. It used this gimmick. It said, think of 2021 like a movie. And then it put in the songs that would be the soundtrack of the movie of my life in 2021. It said, obviously, you're the main character, and then here's the opening credits song, here's the song when you tell someone you love them in the rain, hopefully my wife, and here's the song for the big dance battle at the end. Can you imagine me in a big dance battle? You better not. But anyway, here's the thing that struck me as I was looking at this. It began by saying, obviously, you are the main character. Obviously. But because I believe in this big story that we've seen today, actually, I'm not the main character. God is the main character. And if you come to accept this big story as your story, you do have to accept that. It's so different to what we're trained to think. You can be whatever you want. You can do this. It's about you. No, no. Actually, you have to think differently if you're going to accept this big story. I'm independent. I sort things out my way. No. But let me say this. It is wonderful to be a supporting character in the greatest story. You know, maybe it'd be something to be the main character of your own story, but your own story is never going to touch this story. It's wonderful to be a supporting character in such a great story. Remember I mentioned Harrison Ford just before, how he spoke of stories being so powerful. In the same interview, he went on to say, "My highest ambition is to be an assistant storyteller, to know what it is and my place in the story." If that's the case for Harrison Ford with Indiana Jones and Star Wars and Blade Runner, how much more is it the case for us in such a wonderful big story as the big story of the Bible? A story that gives hope and light. A story that shapes more lives than any blockbuster ever has. It's wonderful to have a supporting role in that. And I want to invite you today to make this story your story. To receive this story and the grace that it gives of the Son of God who came to redeem the world, who came to redeem you and me. To receive that as your story and then to take your part as an assistant storyteller, as a supporting character in this great story. If you want to find out more about the story, keep coming along here to church. We've got Christmas services next week. The details will be on the screen at the end. We'll be having services here each week through summer. Keep coming along and learn more of the story. Read a gospel, the life stories of Jesus from the Bible. They are in some ways the story that's at the heart of the big story of the Bible, the gospels, the stories of Jesus in the Bible. There's free copies to take in the foyer, our gift to you. You're very welcome to take one. Matthew, Mark, Luke and John. Grab one. I'd love for you to take one. I'd love to chat to you more about the story. I'd love for you to read a gospel and talk to you about what you find in it, any of those things. Find out more about the story. And do consider making this story your story, because it's such a wonderful big story to be a part of. Such a vital big story to be a part of. Meantime, we'll finish the story for today back where we began, in John's Gospel, with words that come shortly after the first reading we had. And I've just realized that I forgot to bring my Bible up here, so I'm just going to get it. And then I'm going to read from it. Back at the place where we started, John chapter 1, but beginning at verse 9. "The true light that gives light to everyone was coming into the world. He was in the world, and though the world was made through him, the world did not recognize him. He came to that which was his own, but his own did not receive him. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Children born not of natural descent, nor of a human decision or a husband's will, but born of God. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth." Amen.